Burkina Faso to show support for the junta leaders on the anniversary of the military takeover of power in the African country. And the biggest U.S. automobile workers union calls on 7,000 more members to join a historic strike over a contract dispute with manufacturers. Thank you for joining us. In today's top story, Israeli forces have killed a young Palestinian man and injured another in an attack in the occupied West Bank. Palestinian media said regime forces ambushed the young men and opened fire at their vehicle near the city of Al Bira. One of the victims, identified as Mohammed Rumane, succumbed to his injuries after the attack. The Hamas resistance movement says Rumane and his companion were his members. He said in a statement that he was a hero and was killed trying to defend the freedom of Palestinians. Israel has intensified its attacks against Palestinians in recent months and has killed over 200 people, including children, in the West Bank this year. After 58 days of hunger strike, a Palestinian held in Israeli jails is facing an increased and imminent risk to his health. That's according to local NGO, the Palestinian Prisoners Society. Khayyat Fasfous has been relocated from Ascalon Prison to the notorious Ramla Prison Clinic due to a severe health setback. The 34-year-old is on hunger strike to protest his indefinite detention without charge or trial under Israel's so-called administrative detention policy. This marks his second imprisonment, having previously spent nearly 7 years in Israeli jails. There are nearly 5,000 Palestinians in Israeli prisons, including 160 children. Some 1,200 of them are administrative detainees. The UN chief has called on Israel to release the administrative detainees or bring charges against them, if any exist. Our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kandil, says Palestinian inmate Khayyat Fasfous wants to be either released or be prosecuted.
People spent lengthy years in Israeli jails under the so-called administrative detention. And that's why Khayyat Fasfous is going on with his open-ended hunger strike for 58 days in a row. It's not his first hunger strike, and that's why his health is in serious condition. He has been transferred to a clinic. It's not a clinic. This notorious clinic, Ramli detention, he was transferred from Ascalon, and he before that was held in solitary confinement. It's a move to pressurize Palestinian prisoners to end their hunger strike without achieving any of their demands. These demands are their rights. So Khayyat Fasfous now is asking the Israeli authorities to either release him or prosecute him. Otherwise, he insists to continue his hunger strike until freedom, or even if he passed away behind bars. The Israeli authorities decided to look into his case on the 2nd of October, whether to decide to continue keeping him behind bars under the so-called administrative detention or to release him.
A demonstration against the illegal arrest and detention of a Palestinian Italian researcher by Israel has been held at Rome's largest university, La Sapienza. There, hundreds of students called on the government to act immediately to secure the researcher's release. Max Civilli has more.
Khaled Al-Kaisi is a Palestinian-Italian researcher and student of the Department of Oriental Languages and Civilizations at the Sapienza University of Rome. On August 31st, he was returning from a trip to Bethlehem with his wife and four-year-old child when the Israeli occupation forces arrested him at a checkpoint on the Jordanian border. Al-Qaisi has been detained without any formal charges since that day. On Thursday, hundreds of students from Sapienza University staged a demonstration against Israel's unlawful practice of detaining Palestinians indefinitely without charge or trial, and Italy's inaction over the detention of Al-Qaisi.
Administrative detention by Israel must stop once and for all. Al-Qaisi risks being held in prison indefinitely if the Italian government doesn't take a firm position on the issue.
Al-Qaisi is currently being held at the Petah Tikva interrogation center that is notorious for torture and inhuman treatment. His detention has been extended to October the 1st over, quote, national security concerns. Some members of the Italian parliament have tabled a parliamentary inquiry on the illegal arrest and detention of Al-Qaisi by Israeli occupation forces. However, the Italian government has so far done nothing or very little to protect the rights of an Italian citizen unlawfully seized in front of his family.
I don't know for sure if there is a connection between Italy's government and the media, if our media are subjected to some form of pressure by the government. What I know is that the executive seems to be more interested in protecting its political interest rather than one of its citizens.
A latest report by the United Nations Special Coordinator for the Middle East has found that 1,264 Palestinians are currently held in administrative detention by Israel. The number, according to the UN envoy, is the highest in over a decade. Max Civili, Rome.
Iran's president says the West has long feared the emergence of a rival civilization in the country that is capable of offering a different worldview to contemporary humanity. Raisi said the real basis for the Iranophobia and Islamophobia campaigns in the West is Muslims' strong background in all scientific fields. He added that the West has failed to prevent the emergence of a modern Islamic civilization, especially in Iran. Raisi made the remarks during an address to the 5th Mustafa Prize ceremony. That is a science and technology award granted to top researchers and scientists from the Muslim world. It has been held since 2015 biannually, and this year's ceremony is held in the Iranian city of Isfahan. Hundreds of people have rallied in Burkina Faso's capital, Ouagadougou, in a show of support for the ruling military leaders.
On this day, September 29th, 2023, we have come out here to the Place de la Révolution to show our compassion and encouragement to our authorities and to urge them to move towards a new constitution that will reflect our aspirations. Because we know that the article of the constitution, we inherited it from France, which is our colonizer, which is imperialist. So today, we want a constitution adapted to our realities.
The protesters waved national flags and held signs in support of the country's young military leader, Captain Ibrahim Traoré. He took power on September 30th last year after ousting the leader of another coup who had seized power 8 months prior. Traoré has gained popularity through his anti-French speeches. He has also kicked out French troops and restricted French media amid tensions between France and former colony Burkina Faso. The United States has called on Serbia to pull its forces back from the border with Kosovo after detecting what it called an unprecedented military buildup. The White House says Serbia has deployed sophisticated tanks and artillery in the border area. Serbia has not directly denied the buildup, but rejected claims that its forces are on alert. The new development comes after deadly border clashes that led to the death of a Kosovo policeman and three ethnic Serb gunmen. Following the escalation, NATO said it was ready to boost its peacekeeping force in the country. Kosovo broke away from Serbia and declared independence in 2008 and has long seen tensions between its ethnic Albanian majority and Serb minority. A labor strike against the top three U.S. automakers has expanded amid unsuccessful contract negotiations. The United Auto Workers Union called on 7,000 additional workers to walk off the job at noon on Friday. more than 25,000 workers will now be joining the first ever strike at the big three Detroit automakers, Ford, General Motors and Stellantis. The auto union says sufficient progress has not been made in talks for improved conditions across the board. The strike is in its 15th day and shows no signs of ending. Hundreds of thousands of U.S. workers in various industries have walked off their jobs this year, from Hollywood screenwriters and actors to nurses, hotel staff and pilots. Amongst other reasons, experts blame the rising income inequality, especially amid soaring prices in the current U.S. flagging economy. Flash flooding triggered by torrential downpours has hit the United States' most populous city of New York. Officials have declared a state of emergency for the city as well as Long Island and Hudson Valley. There were no casualties, but some New Yorkers had to be rescued from flooded cars and basement apartments. The extreme rainfall has turned the streets into virtual rivers, building up traffic for millions of commuters. It has also caused major disruptions in the city's subway system, with some lines entirely suspended and many stations closed. This month marks New York City's rainiest September since 1882. A new study has shown that Britain's cost of living crisis is set to cause premature deaths amongst thousands of people this year. Millions of Britons have been hit hard by levels of inflation not seen in decades. That has been blamed on a number of reasons, including war in Ukraine, COVID, Brexit, and the government's economic policies. Here's more.
A new study has shown that Britain's cost of living crisis, that mainly results from the government's economic policy, is set to cause premature deaths among thousands of people this year. The results of the research were published by the BMJ Public Health Journal. The study showed that the cost of living crisis and sustained period of high prices will reduce life expectancy among the people across the country by 6.5% this year. The predicted increase in premature deaths, from a baseline of 463 per 100,000 people to 493 per 100,000, equates to thousands of extra deaths a year in the UK. The study says that the most deprived households will experience four times the number of extra deaths than the wealthiest households, with the poorest having to spend a large proportion of their income on energy, the cost of which has soared. Evidence shows low income is associated with poorer health, and that falls in income adversely affects health. According to last month's figures, the UK's inflation stood at 6.7%.
For me, this whole conversation is about whether I heat the house or whether I breathe. And it's so hard to describe what that feels like in real terms, because it's an immediate threat to your life.
Although it was down from a high of 11.1%, Britain's inflation still remains the highest among the member states of the group of seven. Meanwhile, there are gloomy predictions about UK's economic prospects. A report by the Washington-based Peterson Institute for International Economics says that the UK economy will shrink this year and in 2024. It says a drop in GDP this year of 0.3% would be followed by a fall of 0.2% next year.
Now, if we look at the data that we've seen recently, obviously there can be some revisions in the GDP data. We saw quite a contraction in July. Now, we are expecting, perhaps there are some quirks in the data that we haven't seen as much industrial action recently, and there could be some technical issues and a rebound, but I think the outlook for the rest of this year is quite weak. And we see that, as you've mentioned, in the PMI surveys, both manufacturing and services moving into contraction.
The British economy is expected to shrink this year and in 2024. That's according to a study by Washington-based Peterson Institute for International Economics. It says persistent inflation and a shortage of workers, amongst other things, will result in a 0.3% drop in the UK's gross domestic product this year.
There are fears that the UK is suffering from structural economic conditions. Factors related to the underlying weakness of the UK economy and the fallout from Brexit will leave the UK behind, while most other developed economies expand. The UK was also suffering from an unequal recovery that benefited better-off households, while the bottom half of the income scale continued to be affected by falling real incomes. Persistent inflation, falling real incomes of low-income households, and a shortage of workers will result in the drop in the country's gross domestic product. Cuts to government spending next year will also drag on economic growth. The central bank held rates at 5.25% at its meeting, and betting on financial markets showed investors expect there will be no change at the next meeting in November. The next move could be upwards should inflation prove to be more stubborn than the central bank's forecasts predict, despite a weakening of economic growth.
I think really what we're seeing is they are worried about the recession. They are worried about weaker growth, and they think that perhaps going into the rest of this year, inflation is likely to continue to decelerate. So what we're seeing is the lagged impact of fairly aggressive monetary tightening really starting to bite. And they're probably thinking, right, that here is a time to pause, but we don't want to get too complacent. There are still a lot of inflationary pressures ahead.
The economic crisis and persistent inflation has caused trouble for the ruling Tories in the UK. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak's popularity has fallen to its lowest levels ever. Some 68% of Britons currently have an unfavorable view of the Prime Minister, the highest figure since becoming Prime Minister, while only 23% have a favorable view.
The truth is, the floor fell in for millions of families because of their economic mayhem. Yep. The classroom ceilings collapsed because he cut vital school budgets. And now the walls of our national security have been breached because they've ignored repeated warnings. No one voted for these shambles. No one voted for him. So how much more damage do the British public have to put up with before he finally finds the stomach to give them a say?
Well, that's it for this hour's bulletin. Take care for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Role and status of commanders in victory of sacred defense. Dear listeners, today's episode briefs you on the lives and achievements of five senior commanders of Iran's armed forces. Throughout the 8 years of sacred defense, who attained martyrdom in a plane crash on 29th of September 1981. Stay with us. In the calendar of the Islamic Republic of Iran, 29th of September has been named as a day of commemoration of the martyred commanders of the sacred defense. On 29th of September 1981, following the breakout of siege of the city of Abadan, a C-130 transport plane, which was carrying five of the senior Iranian commanders of the imposed war era, for presentation of a report to the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, the late Imam Khomeini, may his soul rest in peace, crashed in the vicinity of Tehran. In this tragic incident, 49 passengers on board the plane, including five of the senior commanders of the Sacred Defense era, courted martyrdom. The then Defense Minister of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Brigadier General Said Musa Namju, Martyr Yusuf Kolahdouz, the then Deputy Commander of the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, Brigadier General Javad Fakhouri, the former Commander of the Air Force, Major General Waliullah Fallahi, and the acting chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff of the Islamic Republic of Iran's army, and Muhammad Ali Jahan-Ara, the commander of the Khorramshahr Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, were the five senior commanders of the Sacred Defense era who attained martyrdom in this tragic plane crash. One of the most important features of these five senior commanders of the Sacred Defense era was their devotion and loyalty towards the father of the Islamic Revolution, the late Imam Khomeini, may his soul rest in peace. Although figures such as Martyr Fallahi, Martyr Fakhouri, and Martyr Namju spent part of their military careers in the previous Pahlavi regime, they wholeheartedly served the Islamic Revolution. And their devotion and loyalty towards the late Imam dated back to the years prior to the victory of the Islamic Revolution. According to Martyr Fakhouri's wife, he announced his preparedness to hit Shah's palace with his plane upon late Imam's permission. All of these senior commanders were pioneers throughout their academic studies, military service, family life, and the post-Islamic Revolution era. Martyr Fakhouri carried out his first independent flight in 1960 with a T-33 plane for 1.5 hours. In order to attend a flight training course, he was sent to the United States, managing to gain a piloting certificate for the F-4 bombers after 1.5 years. Thereafter, he returned to Iran, serving at Mehrabad base as the second lieutenant. In 1977, he was sent to the United States for attending a military training course, returning to Iran after completion of his course in 1979. He was one of the best pilots of F-4 fighter jets prior to the victory of the Islamic Revolution on 11th of February 1979. Martyr Fakhouri sought the victory of the Islamic Revolution and independence of his country. He was a pious and devout officer and was committed to observation of Islamic rituals. He vigilantly chose his path, which led to his devotion and loyalty towards the divine religion of Islam. According to Martyr Fakhouri's wife, he strongly believed in the sacred religion of Islam. Upon his martyrdom, Iran's army lost one of its most skilled pilots and one of its main theorists. He rendered valuable services to the army and especially to the Air Force of the Islamic Republic of Iran. The then Minister of Defense of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Sayyid Musa Namju, maintained characteristic traits which were similar to those of Martyr Fakhouri. Martyr Namju was a highly qualified and intelligent officer. He was born in Bandar Anzali in Anzali Port in northern Iran in 1938. After completion of his initial studies, he entered the military academy. He began his political activities in the army in 1971. Such that if the Islamic Revolution had not emerged victorious, he would have been executed by the despotic Pahlavi regime. Martyr Namju succeeded Dr. Mustafa Chamran as late Imam's representative in the High Defense Council. Martyr Namju was instated as the Minister of Defense in Dr. Bahonar's cabinet. Upon the victory of the Islamic Revolution, Martyr Musa Namju was instated as the commander of the military academy. He was always known as a religious person during his academic studies and military service. He was one of the army officers who were in touch with the late Imam prior to the victory of the Islamic Revolution. Martyr Namju distributed the tapes and statements of the late Imam prior to culmination of the Islamic Revolution. Upon the invasion of Iran by Saddam's troops, Martyr Namju organized the first volunteer groups which were dispatched to the southern Iranian city of Ahwaz to confront Saddam's army. Martyr Musa Namju played a vital role and decisive role in administration of war until his martyrdom. Marta Valiullah Fallahi was one of the few commanders of the army after the victory of the Islamic Revolution who was a brigadier general in the pre-Islamic Revolution era. However, his political and religious life led revolutionary figures to trust him. He was instated as the commander of the ground force of the Islamic Republic of Iran's army in the early days after the victory of the Islamic Revolution. He went to the military academy in 1951, graduating from the military academy in 1954 as a second lieutenant. Thereafter, he was sent to the 92nd Armored Division of the army's ground force in the city of Ahwaz in southwestern Iran. He was transferred to Tehran in 1958. Throughout his career, he maintained a number of managerial posts, such as the command of the Iranian Army's ground force and chairmanship of the Army's Joint Chiefs of Staff. He was a religious and pious individual. His characteristic traits influenced his associates. He considered guidance of students in the military academy as his duty, as a means to serve the sacred religion of Islam and his country. He was skilled and meticulous in his duties and was respected by all of his colleagues. He was also a patriot. Marta Yusuf Kolahduz is one of the well-known military and religious figures who began his professional life by serving in the army. Upon receipt of his diploma, he entered the military academy. He aimed for recruiting the religious personnel of the army for standing up against Shah's despotic regime. He was in touch with the late Imam via a number of mediators. He dismantled the tanks of the Pahlavi regime, which aimed to occupy the palace of residence of the late Imam, and a number of sensitive regions of the city of Tehran on 10th of February 1979, once again showing his loyalty to the late Imam and to his country. Some of the measures that he carried out after the victory of the Islamic Revolution include the establishment of a military committee in the Alawi School, which was the place of residence of the late Imam, establishment of the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, IRGC, upon late Imam's instruction, launch and development of the educational units of the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, the IRGC. He also played a pivotal role in the preparation of the Charter of the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, the IRGC. He was a deputy commander of the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps at the time of his martyrdom. The youngest commander who attained martyrdom in the plane crash was Muhammad Jahan Ara. Jahan Ara was just 27 years old. He was the commander of the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps in the city of Khorramshahr in southwestern Iran, who, with the assistance of volunteer and popular forces, stopped Saddam's army behind the gateways of the southern Iranian city for 34 days. Khorramshahr is the epitome of the efforts, loyalty, and selflessness of young Iranians who defended this southern Iranian city against Saddam's troops.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light.
The Creator made Adam in his image, then placed the world in his care. May you walk alongside the Creator in righteousness.
God of Abraham, take my child into thy hands, that he may live to thy service.
God has spoken to us before, through Abraham, Noah, Moses, and through Jesus Christ. Why should we be so surprised that God speaks to us now through Muhammad?
Viewpoint.
A critique of movies with religious themes on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God. Welcome to another edition of the program, Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio. With me, Muhammad Jawad, the host of this program, and my guest speaker, Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Yasser. Sayyid Abdullah, assalamu alaikum, and welcome to the program.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, and thank you for having me, bro.
You're welcome. And Brother Yasser, greetings to you too.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Same for you, Brother Muhammad Jawad.
Thank you very much. In these episodes of Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio, we try to criticize movies with religious themes. And one of these movies that we decided to work on from now on, or from this episode onwards, hopefully or inshallah, is Victoria and Abdul, which is produced in 2017, directed by Stephen Frears. So let's take a listen to a short part of this movie or a trailer of Victoria and Abdul, and then we'll be back criticizing it. Don't go away.
No one really knows what it's like to be queen.
Mother!
You're spying on me.
Everyone I've loved has died, and I just go on and on.
What is the point?
Service, Your Majesty. We are here for a greater purpose.
You are a servant no longer.
You will teach me Urdu and the Quran.
You've upset the order of everything.
Drop this Indian peasant, or we will have you certified insane.
Treason! I am cantankerous, greedy, fat. I am perhaps disagreeably attached to power. But I am anything but insane. I am Queen of England. Empress of India. Abdul has risen on his own merits. Now he is my friend. I haven't been as happy as this for years.
Back to the program, Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio. With me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Yasser, my guest speakers, helping me criticize the movie Victoria and Abdul, produced in 2017, directed by Stephen Frears. This movie is featuring stars such as Judi Dench, Ali Fazal, or the story is about Abdul Karim, a young prison clerk from India who travels to present Queen Victoria with a mohur, the ceremonial coin, on her golden jubilee, and strikes an unlikely friendship with Queen Victoria, with her. So, Sayyid Abdullah, you know, IMDb gives this movie 6.8 out of 10, which is a good rating, basically. And Rotten Tomatoes gives it 66%, Metacritic 58%. How did you like this movie?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I kind of enjoyed the movie, to be quite honest. It was very lighthearted. It was very well done, very well nice. The acting was good. It kind of, you know, it keeps you engaged with the movie. So in that regard, it was really good. I liked it. I enjoyed it. But at the same time, I hated it for the reason that they have the ability to make you like someone who was so corrupted as the Queen Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they were bloodbaths. They you know, massacred people on the way from England all the way to India.
Yeah.
And yet they have to project them in such a, you know, compassionate, loving and caring human beings. And also, I didn't like the fact that they made a person like Abdul Karim, the Indian servant of hers, that he was such a loving character to the point he had a thing for her feet.
Mm.
You know, he was kissing her feet and stuff like that. I'm like, that wasn't necessary. That wasn't, you know, I'm not sure if that even happened. You know what I mean? So in
despite
sense,
the fact that it was written based on truth.
Exactly. So in a sense, the movie itself as a movie was nice, was captivating. The acting was good. We give them credit for that. As far as the story goes, there's a lot of things that I wasn't really happy with. I was just like, you know, it kind of kept me agitated to some of the scenes that were going on.
Okay. Thank you very much, Syed Abdullah. Let's take a short break by listening to a part of the movie Victoria and Abdul, produced in 2017, directed by Stefan Frears. And then we'll be back with the questions and critical answers from my guest speaker, Syed Abdullah, and Brother Yasser. So don't go away.
You any idea how cold it is in England? We're going to die there. Why did you agree to come? The tall one fell off an elephant. I wasn't given a choice. Ugh. 5,000 miles to present a bloody medal to the oppressor of the entire Indian subcontinent.
You don't realize what a great honor this is for us.
Have you ever tasted English food? They eat pig's blood.
They do not eat pig's blood.
I'm telling you, they put pig's blood in the sausages and brains of sheep. This is completely barbaric.
Back to the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio. With me, Mohammed Jawad, the host of this program, and Syed Abdullah and Brother Yasser, my guest speakers, who help me all the time in such series of episodes. Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio, to criticize the movie Victoria, directed by Stefan Frears. Brother Yasser, I'm talking about this early part of the movie, the two Indians invited to the Buckingham Palace, you know, to talk about the different food and climate of the UK and compare it, obviously, to that of India or those of India on a ship traveling to England. I'm talking about that specific part at the beginning of the movie, rather. You know, both of you guys, Syed Abdullah and Brother Yasser, you know, you experience similar trips, basically, like, or rather, migration from your own hometown to different countries. For you, for example, to the UK, you've been there and you also came to Iran. So, is it simple to like travel like this to a country and for some time you resided in the UK and also here in Iran? So, what's your take on this?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. It's a nice question. But unfortunately, we haven't traveled by boat. We haven't stayed months on the ship, you know. With cold
and against
seas.
Your will, by the way.
Against our will, you know, fighting the seas. But I don't know what to say, but like probably him himself, like, but our ancestors did. Like my mom did.
Mm.
My mom traveled at that time from Pakistan to the UK on ship.
Mm.
And talking the 60s now, in the 1960s.
With the whole family, right?
Yeah, well, look at my granny, my late grandmother, my mom, my aunts,
my
uncles and so on who left Pakistan at that time. Also remembering that this movie is based in the 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
So India and Pakistan had not split at that time.
Right.
So just so the people know that they split in 1947. So
yeah.
When we say India, we don't mean India today.
Mm-hmm.
It was India, in the greater India, if you want to call it, at that time.
Yeah.
So understanding that the British Empire ruled over that entire area of land.
Mm-hmm.
But like it comes to like my own personal experience. So I remember when I first went to the UK as well, we would know that the winters were cold. Like the same as these two.
Exactly.
Yeah,
just
these two, right?
Pakistan. Yeah,
these two.
Yeah.
Like, so I'm going from South Africa.
Yeah,
right?
Of course.
So Africa, it's not like you don't get cold winters. It's not cold, like not snow. It's not, it doesn't rain. So when you go to the UK and you're in that winter where it's dark the whole day.
Yeah.
And you have this...
It was always cloudy, rainy.
And you have this drizzle.
Uh-huh, yeah.
You know, it's just constant drizzle.
Yeah.
24/7.
Yeah.
And it really, you know, gets on you.
Uh-huh.
And you don't see any sunlight for like weeks. No sunlight.
I see.
And you have to also deal with those people, some of them, not all of them, some of them. You know, you get, you know, depressed and so on and so forth. And remember, like, people can't stay there. People just run
so
away
you
from
identify
them.
With the other guy.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, it's natural. Like, you go to a place that has no sunlight for weeks.
Yes.
And all you have is a small patter of the drizzle. And it's a cold drizzle, right? Yeah. It's winter. It's cold drizzle. And you have to wait, like, and his time obviously no, but like my time, we had to wait for a bus, and the bus would come, and you had to sit on this bus, and you travel for the bus for an hour to get to school, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't nice, but and also like the first winter, you would wear 3 to 4 different layers of clothing. You have thermal, then you have a yeah. T-shirt, then a jacket, and so on.
Too heavy on
you. And you had to do that, but then, alhamdulillah, over time you start acclimatizing, you get used to the things. So I remember like when I went back to South Africa after a while in the UK. The winters in South Africa wasn't harsh to me.
Yeah.
Where my friends would be wearing jackets and stuff. I'd be wearing a
short sleeve
t-shirt.
It's like a spring already.
Yeah, I'd be wearing a short sleeve t-shirt because I wouldn't feel the cold.
Mm.
Because I'm used to, like, right now, we have a brother here from Canada. And for him, like, the winter times, he's wearing, like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah.
it's coming from minus 35, minus 40. Like, this is nothing for him. So, exactly. You have that thing.
Okay. Thank you very much. Let's take a short break by listening to a part of the movie Victoria and Abdul, produced in 2017, directed by Stefan Frears. And then we'll be back. Don't go away.
Civilization!
Please, sir.
Here's a father. Here's a father, sir.
Arms.
Back to the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio with me, Mohammad Jawad, the host of this program, and Brother Yasser and Sayyid Abdullah, my guest speakers, helping me criticize the movie Victoria and Abdul, directed by Stefan Frears, produced in 2017. Sayyid Abdullah, on their arrival, the two invited Indians' arrival, or their ships anchoring in the port of England, their guide says, "Welcome to the civilization." But it's quite paradoxical because there are a few beggars just at the foot of the ship, you know, on the port, asking them for mercy or money.
Yeah.
Right? Quite paradoxical. Even the movie tries to be funny somehow in that case. Another paradox is the implication of the ancient world in Asia, in general, and India in particular, as uncivilized. This is the implication of this expression, right? Welcome to the civilization. We all know India, Persia, you know, they have old civilizations.
Yep.
Long before the newer world or the West, came to exist.
Yep.
Don't you agree?
I do agree indeed. I mean, that's the thing, that's the funny thing about history. They rewrite it based on the way they want people to see it,
mm-hmm.
not the way it is. We all know that Persia, for example, Babylon, or even India, or this was the cradle of civilization. Mm-hmm. Civilization started from there.
Right.
Languages started from there. Writing started from there. Everything started from that particular area, like the Middle East or the Persia back in the day, or Babylon, or what have you.
Yes.
And you can even see that, like, when he was talking to about Taj Mahal,
talking
to the queen, and he's like, even in terms of building, we're way beyond you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The way we were advanced, we're way behind before you. You guys are way behind us.
Mm-hmm.
So, and if you look at the history of Britain, it was just bloodbath. They were killing each other. Like, I was looking at one video, a historical video. It was just one kind of rulership after the other. Like, within years, you would have few major wars, and began with the Vikings and before the Vikings. So it was barbaric in its nature.
Mm-hmm.
They were very, very barbaric. And until, like, very recent, you know, then they started to, you know, when the industry era hit in and stuff like that, otherwise, in their nature, they are far away from civilization.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing civilized about them. And even until now, they dress and they clothe themselves with civilization, but they're far away from it. So even, like I said, if you compare to India or Persia or whatever they were trying to highlight compared to Britain, there's not, especially even in that time, in that era, in the early 90s or late 80s, if you look at Britain itself, it was an absolute mess.
Mm-hmm.
And people were living in poverty and disease and famine and what have you.
Yeah.
While the
this
other
geometric
world,
progression is quite a recent phenomenon.
It's
right?
very recent. And they only progress because by sucking the blood out of us.
Yeah.
That's how they survived. That's how they flourished. Otherwise, they have nothing. Mm-hmm. So what civilization are they talking about?
Okay, thank you very much, Syed Abdullah and Brother Yasser, for your nice comments and contribution to the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio, in which we try to criticize the movie Victoria and Abdul, directed by Stefan Frears. Of course, we haven't come to the end of its criticism, so we'll continue our criticism of these movies in the upcoming episode. Thank you very much for listening to us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
I'm 81 years of age and have almost a billion citizens. I've been in office 62 years, making me the longest serving monarch in history. Have we finished?
Abdul, you will travel to England, to the royal household. You will present the Queen with a ceremonial coin.
Whatever you do, you must not look at Her Majesty.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the limelight.
Every hegemonic currency system has its day of collapse. It is the US itself that sets off the inevitable trend of the end of dollar dominance, which may be what many American strategists and economic pundits are worried about. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Brazil's former representative at the International Monetary Fund, IMF, Paulo Nogueira Bastissa, has told RT, "The dollar-based international monetary system is becoming increasingly dysfunctional, prompting BRICS countries to consider creating their own currency." According to Bastissa, even though the greenback will remain an important global legal tender, the currency can no longer be trusted. Speaking ahead of the 15th BRICS summit in Johannesburg, the Brazilian economist said that U.S.-led financial institutions are not addressing the needs of developing countries. He pointed to growing dissatisfaction among emerging market economies with the way that existing dollar-based institutions such as the IMF and the World Bank work. A According to RT, officially known as the New Development Bank, NDB, the organization is a multilateral financial development institution established by the Alliance of Major Emerging Economies comprising Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa in 2014. The economist noted that the NDB was created by and for emerging economies without the participation of advanced countries and claimed it is more global, south-oriented than the World Bank can ever be. Batista said, "We had deliberate intention to have the bank acting in a non-intrusive manner, support the plans, infrastructure, sustainable development in countries without trying to guide them, overwhelm them with rules that are not necessarily the ones that they see fit for their own development needs." Speaking about the prospects of de-dollarization, he stated that the fact that the U.S. has been using the dollar as a weapon to target countries seen as hostile to West has reduced confidence in it. He warned when the United States does what it does by taking advantage of its role as the issuer of dominant currency, other countries are uncertain as to whether they can continue using the dollar as they have been using. Batista insisted that the multipolar world would lead to the reduction of the role of Western currencies. The former IMF executive explained, "This has accelerated with the use of the dollar for political purposes, for geopolitical purposes, notably now against Russia." According to Batista, BRICS has a role to play in creating its own reserve currency. Russia has already proposed that the new currency be called R5, as the currencies of the BRICS countries will begin with the letter R, that is, real, ruble, rupee, renminbi, and rand. Batista concluded, "I believe that the R5 can be started as a unitive account and subsequently evolve into other steps." Meanwhile, the Korea Times noted the American dollar's dominance on global trade looks to be challenged by the expansion of an economic bloc involving China, according to research by ING. The Association of Five Major Emerging National Economies, including Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, represents about a quarter of the global economy and accounts for 41.9% of people on Earth. Bloc representatives are meeting in South Africa. The Dutch bank's analysts Chris Turner, Dimitri Dalgin, and James Wilson wrote in a note recently, "We suspect the subject of de-dollarization might gain some traction this summer when senior leaders of the BRICS nations meet. The economic expansion of BRICS could determine the speed at which it adopts commercial and financial systems outside the dollar sphere, posing certain challenges to the dollar's dominant status as an international currency," they said. Beijing has stepped up criticism of Washington for weaponizing the U.S. dollar over the past year and a half, citing Western sanctions on Russia, including freezing Russian central bank assets, kicking it out of the SWIFT global payment system, and also denying Moscow access to the U.S. dollar. Calls for de-dollarization appear to have gained traction in recent months, such as when Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva openly called for local currency settlements rather than through the U.S. dollar during his China visit in April. Such currency unions are intergovernmental agreements involving two or more states sharing the same currency. Last month, Alexander Babakov, deputy chairman of Russia's State Duma, said that Russia was spearheading the development of this currency union for cross-border trade among a number of developing nations, according to BRICS information portal. The news is expected to add new momentum to the trend of de-dollarization in the global economy. If the currency is successfully issued, it is expected to drive the depreciation of credit currencies, such as the U.S. dollar, relative to gold in the medium to long term. And that is what Zhejiang Securities said in an August report. However, Reuters reported that a BRICS currency was off the table, citing South African officials. And that is what Reuters and some other Western media claimed. Korea Times added China's currency is becoming increasingly used in trade settlements, international payments, and foreign exchange transactions. For instance, Argentina's government paid its International Monetary Fund debt in yuan gained through a bilateral currency swap plan. In its quarterly monetary policy report recently, the People's Bank of China vowed to promote the internationalization of the yuan, further expand its use in cross-border trade and investment, and develop its offshore market. More economies are accelerating the diversification of their foreign exchange reserves, and this includes adopting currencies from emerging economies such as yuan. ING said, de-dollarization is seen mainly in the central bank's international reserves, as the dollar is being pushed out by a variety of currencies, including the yuan. According to the Dutch bank, the U.S. dollar's share of global forex reserves fell to 58.6% in 2022, hitting its lowest point since data was first available in 1995. The ING report said, looking at the long-term developments, the U.S. dollar seems to be replaced mostly by Asian currencies. The ING said bilateral swap lines with various central banks established by the People's Bank of China since 2009 have been a flagship example that winning the world off the dollar requires challenging its international role in trade invoicing.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Your headlines for this hour: Israeli forces have shot and killed another Palestinian youth during a raid in the occupied West Bank. People have